Welcome to RGM. Are you in a band? Come and join us. Simply click on the RGM submission page, submit your music, and we'll sort the rest. Welcome back. I'm in full-on podcast mode today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm interviewing three bands today, so stay tuned. Oh, it's so much fun, these podcasts. I've said it before, but it is the favourite thing that I do within the whole thing of RGM. It's hard work sometimes, but you know, I'm not scared of that. And like last week, where, you know, and I hope you enjoyed last week's show. It was a review of a previous. We played the first ever episode from this series with John Cooper Clarke, the legend John Cooper Clarke. And it was we had to do that really because life got in the way a little bit. I'm buying a new house. Things have been busy. A couple of guests rearranged. A few guests that we've already had recorded have wanted it to come out. Wanted their interview to come out at a different time because it, you know, because it more around their release date and all that kind of stuff. It was the first time that's happened for many, many months. So I hope you enjoyed a little recap of our interview with John Cooper Clarke last week. You know, these things happen, but there's always going to be a show for you, ladies and gentlemen, you know. And you've made it back, so thank you. And today's guests, ladies and gentlemen, are none other than Zach and Michael from Dictator. Another one of those bands that I've been keeping an eye on online, you know. Had a great chat with it. These guys have got the red screwed on. They're all over it. They are. How do I word this? They are a meticulous. I'm not going to be able to pronounce this word. You know when some words fail you? This one failed me. The meticulous. That's the word I'm looking for. With the detail, they know what they're doing. They understand the game, the music industry game, and a lot of the things that they told me, you know, is that true? They recently. And we talk about this on the podcast, so I'm not going into it too much, but they realise that, you know, being in a band, you have to do more than just music. You've got this fucking everything else around you need to do these days. And, you know, we had a great chat about, you know, them supporting ratings, you know, the new music coming out. So that's coming up very shortly, ladies and gentlemen, so you'll be excited for that. And, ladies and gentlemen, if you're new to the podcast, this podcast is all about the delving into the music industry, the grassroots music industry as well, and beyond, of course. Finding new and interesting people to speak to and sharing those chats with you, the podcast listeners, or watchers, because you can watch us on YouTube as well. We're about 50 people off that magical number of 1,000 that we need on YouTube as well. So if you're interested in the podcast and you like what we do, it's available over on YouTube to watch our little faces have these chats. Thank you. Yeah, so how's your week been? I forgot to ask you, didn't I? You know. Yeah, I'm going through the home buying process. And I've never known. What's the word? The words are failing me again. There's a black hole within the process of buying a house. And that's called the legal people, solicitors. Fuck knows what they get up to. And it takes them a week to do. Oh. But I'm not on my own, you know, it's part of the process, isn't it? You know, people are busy, I suppose. I just need to be patient, but I'm buying a new house and I can't wait. So I'm going to have this brand new, I said it on a previous podcast. And don't tell Kirsty, okay, the missus. But the main reason why I like the house was, one, it's got a car charger on front of it, so I don't have to buy one of them because I've got an electric car. But two, I'm going to have my own room. Rather than because we've only got a two-bedroom house at the minute, rather than have to share my podcast with a bed and stuff, and a coat rail and that kind of stuff, I'm going to have my own room where I can do RGM stuff and have a little podcast studio, get me lighting right and that kind of stuff, you know. So I'm right excited about that. I can't remember any of the other parts of the house. I know it's got a bit of a garden and that. And it's next to a golf course, which is nice. But anyway, I'm going to get a nice new room where I can just sit in and do RGM stuff. So that's going to be nice. If anybody knows or has any tips on how to speed solicitors up, write in to carl@rgm.press. That'd be very much appreciated. anyway, I divulge. I diverse. Words are not my tool today, but luckily, I've got two people on the guest today on the podcast that are great with words, and that's Zach and Michael from Dictator. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for another week. It's always appreciated. I'll see you on the other side of this interview. We're going to go with Dictator, Zach and Michael. Take it away, lads.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, nice one. There we go.
Listen, if you're looking for interesting guests, you have picked the wrong two guys, unfortunately. We don't get much more boring than Dictator.
I've just been to the gym.
Okay, fair enough.
So I have it slightly late. Hey.
Right, okay. So that's a crap way to start an interview.
It's just honest.
Fair enough. Fair. Set your expectation. Where it belongs.
I've always said as our gem, I always like to get to know people that I see grafting online. And I've seen Dictator all over the place. You know, you're out there grafting, doing your thing, creating this amazing music of yours. I've had your EP on for the last week or so, just really enjoying Rubik's Cube. And I just wanted to have a chat with you and get to know you a little bit. So welcome, guys. Let's do it, eh?
Nice one. Thank you.
Nice one. So fun stuff going on behind the scenes. You've got music coming out. It's festival season. There's loads of stuff going on. You've been out there in the world touring and getting the Dictator name out there. Where do you guys feel like you are within the music industry at the minute then? Just introduce yourselves and where do you feel you are within this fucking grand scheme of things?
I like to think that we're actually carving our own wee lane within the music industry. You know, we do things quite differently, I suppose. Even the type of music that we're making, we fall kind of reluctantly into that indie rock category, but that's not really who we are whatsoever. We draw on electronic music and hip-hop as influences. Yeah. So I think that we just keep ourselves inside our little pocket and we just do what we want to do. And I think that's good because then we're not getting in influenced by maybe what might be popular at the time. You know, we're just doing what we want to do. So, but we've found a really positive community in the sort of the grassroots artists and the grassroots supporters. So, and we're obviously at that level. We're not being a headliners or anything like that. We're quite comfortable. But we're quite comfortable. Just as independent artists, just working away.
Yeah. Now, where do you feel, Michael? Do you agree with that? Or
definitely. I think, see, in terms of where we're at as a band, we were all like excited at the start, right? And I think everybody's like ready and raring to go, right? And we've went through the curve, right? Yeah. So as in, like, and the curve is touring, right? You as a musician go away on tour. You soon realise that all your hopes and dreams of being a musician, you get to realise what they are, right? And they get stuffed and crushed. But then you come back and you pick up the pieces and you go, right, I don't really like that, but there is things I like. And actually, I like this, 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 and this. And you get a little bit more picky, but you double down on the stuff that you like doing, right? So I feel like where we're at, we are genuinely probably like living the dream. See, if you asked us like 10, 15 years ago, when we were like kind of younger, we are genuinely the definition of success back then with the things that we've done, right? We feel like we're at the foot of this massive mountain, right? But the difference is that we've started realizing that we're kind of wee bits along, that we're a bit like quite happy here. You know what I mean? It's almost like you get halfway up for the après ski bit and then you're sitting there going like, this bit's actually quite class. Just bear that in mind. The peak is no what it's all cracked up to be. So I feel like we're maybe a couple of rungs up the ladder.
So right?
Maybe a quarter of the way up.
Which bits of it specifically were giving you a bit of PTSD then?
Been stuffed in a van, right, okay, with these guys for like 3 or 4 days. Nah, to be fair, right, I'll tell you what it is. It's a lot of stress around money and logistics and like genuinely, you think about like quite a lot of people, depending on what they do for work, right, the hardest things to procrastinate over are sending emails and like and managing your account, managing your money in your bank account, blah, 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 worrying about what bills you've got to pay. That is basically touring. So you've got no money and you've constantly got to update everybody. Now, as you start to progress, you get people who jump on along for the ride and help you with it. But like driving, and it's class, like, don't get me wrong, but like, it's just like, see, for the first couple of times you do it, you love it. But then you start to go like, right, you're away every other weekend, right? Mm. And then you start to realise that you've got lives, you've got families, you've got other halves that you're kind of sitting there going like, oh, this is actually quite... Mm. You start to see why there's a sort of cycle of people who it can get really stressful and you feel like you've got little control over it. So it's specifically, right, playing the shows is amazing. Mm. But I remember we played a show in Newcastle and the trains got cancelled, right? Mm. Like everybody's train got cancelled. And it was maybe like 15, 20 people pulled out. Now the show was still a success. It was still good. We sold a lot of tickets, but we're 15, 20 people down. Mm. And there's nothing more demoralising than like, we've just literally been travelling for 4 days. We've rocked up in Newcastle. We're buzzing about the gig. And then you're just so drained. And actually it takes you a couple of days or weeks to recover. And by the way, I'm not painting this as a negative, like, because it's still amazing playing shows. Yeah. It's just, that'll test you. That'll genuinely test you because you realise that there's more of this to come on a sort of more stressful scale. Yeah. And actually, like, you need to be sure that you're wanting to do it. And actually, it's not a bad thing. You feel totally demotivated after it, but it's really good because you get to ask yourself that now, not when you're signed up to a major label, not when you've got thousands of people waiting on you performing, not like all of this stuff. Actually, you just get to go and do it at your own pace. So it's hard, but worth it.
It's, I love hearing stories like that because it's the real world, and that's definitely a place I live in. And a lot of bands ask me for advice on how to progress and that kind of stuff. And one of the first things I say to them is, you know, decide if you want to do it for a hobby or if you're in this for life, because you can spoil the experience taking it too seriously if not all the members are really committed to the cause. Yeah. That's popular in, I won't say the word popular, but it's common within bands. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people that aren't committed as other people within it. And you basically decide if it's going to be a hobby, then you can go out and enjoy playing live music, do whatever you do, play five times a week, do whatever you want to do. But the honesty and the graft and what you have to do to try and make a living and get the holy grail of, you know, earning money through the music industry, that's the real world. And that's, you know, you've described it really well there. That's basically sums it up, doesn't it? But it peaks and troughs all the time.
Pretty much. And you never know what's around the corner.
Yeah.
So you're planning against it. You think about any other business, like any other line of work, and we are all quite committed, but we're also quite professional people when we want to take it seriously, right? Mm. And the thing is, like, we genuinely, like, we do muck about, but we do care. Yeah. It's not, I mean, didn't mistake like passion for like the fact that we don't see it for what it is. We just really care about what we do. So we want to be the best at it, i.e. the best we can give at the time. And sometimes I think people misinterpret that as like maybe a bit boring and stuff like that. But it's actually the opposite. Like genuinely, like we do take it seriously for a good reason. Because we don't want to look back and go, oh, we would have made it if we didn't go and sink pints after every show. And then by the second show, we couldn't sing, you know, stuff like that. So it's, I don't know. It's good though. It's good to have these moments, you know.
How do you find progressing, getting gigs, booking the venues, doing the tour and stuff as a band from West Lothian, which Zach was just telling me is between Glasgow and Edinburgh. It's in between there then. How do you find it, you know, a band coming from your area and looking to get out and about?
I think like West Lothian has had a wee bit of a moment in the past few years with Lewis Capaldi and the Snits, so I think... I don't like to say that we're riding their coattails, but we're definitely riding their coattails, man. So it's not been too bad. The social media aspect of it has really helped us to connect with people all around the country.
Yeah.
So it's kind of made it a bit easier to connect with promoters in different areas and different cities, and also booking venues in different areas and different cities, and then being fairly confident that we can go to London and play to a decent crowd of people.
Yeah.
So being from West Lothian, it's not like the most supportive area in terms of arts and creative people, but it's not really been a hindrance to us, I don't think, anyway.
Well, rewinding, before you both got into music, then let's rewind a little bit. Let's zoom out a little bit. So talk us through you both individually. What were you like growing up, that kind of stuff, in school, just finding your way in life? Talk us through your individual journeys before you got into music.
I'm looking forward to this one, Zach, for you. But to be fair, we both grew up in West Lothian. For me, I've always had an interest in music, right? So like this has genuinely been like a lifelong pursuit of mine. I think before music, so like when I was younger and stuff like that, I think everybody has that same origin story, right? In terms of some way, shape, or form of getting an instrument and then getting obsessed with that instrument, and then kind of that's when you start to look up to your heroes and stuff like that, and then you try and emulate it. I think everybody from whatever maybe age of when they get it, maybe 5 to 10, up until they get into teenage years and start going fully developed for themselves, are trying to emulate whoever that they first kind of heard, right? So for me, I got a I was actually mad into the keyboard, right? So I had, everybody gets like a little keyboard for their kid. But my dad had a little sort of Casio keyboard, right, with a wee bossa nova sound
I
and
was
stuff
going
like
to
that.
say that
And
with a fucking Boston over. I was going to say that.
So I can tell you for sure that will definitely be used on the album, right? So like, in some way, shape, or form, that's
It's
getting
on.
used. But that was kind of like where I started, right? And I kind of started to learn. One of the earliest things is like I obviously progressed and you get better at it and you start understanding like chord progressions and stuff like that. And I went to see Calvin Harris, right? And this was way back when he was doing his Acceptable in the 80s stuff and all that, right? Went to see him at the Liquid Rooms. That was my first ever gig. I think I was 10, maybe 11. And I just remember coming back and devouring that album and basically replicating every sound on my keyboard, right? And going away and adjusting the sounds to match what he had. That was my first. Like, see if there's anything like mapping directly to what we're doing now. That was my first instance of that, right? I think I got an acoustic guitar after that. I was mad into the View, and then basically from the age of about 12 to 18, various forms of bands, right? Various like attempts, like playing all these the Battle of the Bands, or we used to rent out. Everybody's a Catholic up here because we went to Catholic school. So if you speak to us, right, anybody we speak to is a Catholic or a Protestant. And basically, there's a massive, massive weird thing of like it's either there's loads of halls, so many halls, right? And I don't know how it is back where doing where you are, but there's either a Masonic lodge, there's some lodge, some hall you can play in. We've played them all. So, like, literally, if it's been for like some random aunt's 75th birthday or something, you're playing. Normally, it's like, oh, they'll play. So you're either in a pub. You used to rent the Canon Holborn Hall, which is a hall right next to the Catholic Church in Broxbourne. Used to play there often, right? That was my first sort of like gateway into what live music was. We used to put on nights and we used to like printed off little tickets and stuff like that, right?
Nice.
That was like for the age of about 15, 16 when you first started learning how to drink and stuff like that. So I think for me, that was my first paving into it. And then basically throughout the kind of years beyond that, just getting more and more into like mines is like production, like synths and like and learning like so I use Logic, which is like I said, digital the DAW. If you if, depending on if you write music and stuff, that's my bag. So I like synths and creating music and like music production, and that's kind of like really where it's evolved, as well as a live element. But I feel like every single one of us before Dictator had a grounding in this mad live environment because you were plenty of old guys who didn't want to hear you. So, like, genuinely, like, see, by the time you actually was like, there's people who want to listen to you and are paying for tickets to your show, oh, you could eat that up. It's great. There's no pressure there, you know?
What were some of the band names?
We've got the Barrels,
Nice.
Zach and Alan were in Japan 4.
Nice.
I can't remember what we were before that. We were something else before the Barrels. With loads of different like variations on the name. Still got quite a lot of the old stuff. But aye, just loads of different. We were in the Phantoms. We were like that's where the crossover first happened. Where we're like we just up jamming. Kind of
Nice.
semi joined the Phantoms. Played Transmit, the first ever Transmit up here. And then we were like, ah, oh, like these guys are actually on the same wavelength. And I think like we kind of realized that if we gave it a good go, we could maybe get a little bit further than we had before. And genuinely, that was the goal, a little bit further than we had before. We're in no man's land. We don't know what we're doing next. We don't have a clue. We weren't betting on this. We just knew we could get to a certain point. Now we're just foraging
So
in the dark.
have you self-taught yourself the production and logic and that kind of stuff, or is there opportunities around you to learn these things?
Loads to learn. So, like, see, we've worked with a lot of good people, and like the more so, like, songwriting. I write the songs, and how I kind of work is, so I've got a Mac Mini, and kind of like as the idea strikes, that's usually when things get taken apart. I normally start off with a beat, much to the kind of disappointment of our drummer, who like who gets this beat because it can you just play that exactly the same. That's kind of what happens, but not in a bad way. Like, we do end up letting them hack cool freestyle, but yeah, start off with that and then build the kind of the song around it through logic, right? Now, what's happened is over the years, the more people we work with, you take little nuggets, right? And especially on songwriting and things like that, that's where I've really learned a lot through getting challenged. There's a lot of good people, like friends that we've got who, like, we've got the Adam Warrington, who's the guitarist for Youngblood, right? He's worked with, like, the guys who worked with the 1975 and stuff, right? And he's sitting there giving us, like, little production tips that he got for them. So it's, like, an ever-evolving thing. I've devoured a lot of, like, kind of material, right? Just like Mark Ronson's, like, school on how to produce and stuff. It's just an ever-evolving thing. Try to figure out what my stamp is, if there is one.
How did you get those contacts? How did you create these different arms of picking up skills?
Just by being class, normal. You're kidding, not just like, see, just
for bloggers, mate.
Bloggers, yeah, that's all right.
For bloggers,
yeah.
I've got a very red neck, mate. If I can, a blowtorch wouldn't give me a brass neck, honestly, mate. So I just reach out to folk. Adam's different. Adam's from the West Lothian as well, so we kind of knew him from the circuit. But the majority of people that we work with is because we're just like, oh, they seem to be quite interesting. We'd like to work with them, and then we shoot them a message, and they either reply to us or ignore us.
Yeah, fair enough. Talk us through your journey, Zach. How did you get into this bloody place we've all ended up?
I never really grew up, like, there was no musicians or instruments in my household, but there was always music. My mum was like an old raver, so we had lots of dance music, lots of trip hop and soul and stuff like that. But I was always listening to music all the time. That was what I did. I got into playing music because just a mate was like trying to start a band when I was like 11 or 12 or something. Yeah. He kind of taught me a few riffs on his guitar, and then I got a guitar, and that was me. I was hooked. And like Michael says, we were all joining bands at that age, all in the same circuit. But, and we had sort of, in some of those bands, we were fairly successful, like in relative terms anyway. But I was just a wee fanny, man. So I thought it was all about the rock and roll lifestyle. And I feel like we maybe pissed some of those opportunities up the wall. Until the Phantoms came along, me and Michael crossed paths, realised that we were into sort of similar, we wanted to create similar styles of music. And then when Dictator sort of launched, and we had that outlet, I kind of screwed it up a wee bit. And we were basically really passionate about what we were doing, and it takes up all of my attention now.
Yeah.
So it's a short story.
One thing I saw on your socials earlier is that what's the skateboard thing? That's just come to me. What's this skateboard thing I've seen on your socials earlier?
That's just me. So like, we're fucking skint, bro, right? Like, we're absolutely ripped. Yeah. And we're about to launch like loads of new music. So I'm a skateboarder when like I was younger, and even though I don't really skateboard anymore, I still have that mentality. Yeah. I still think I'm a skateboarder, but I would fall on my arse if I ever tried to ride one. I just thought it would be a fun merch idea. So I bought some blank decks, and we've always got like Dictator logo, like silhouettes floating around everywhere. So I had some of them, and I've just been painting some skateboards, and when I finally get one to the standard that I'm happy with, we'll raffle it off, or we'll sell them. Like, there's already been some interest, so we'll probably just sell them and use them to fund the next batch of releases.
Yeah, because I do notice that on your socials that you remind me a little bit like Fat Dads. Do you know Fat Dads?
Yeah, they've got the best band name.
Yeah, it's just class. They're from like more Cumbria pop, Scotland, Cumbria way up your way.
Yeah.
I always enjoy their socials. They're just having a laugh on it, and they're just trying new stuff, and they're experimenting all the time. And I see that I see you guys experimenting, and not one of my big bugbears is that bands are really boring at the minute. They're announcing that everything's coming out at 6 o'clock tomorrow, and it's just going to be a single one, and it's just like an half-assed release thing, and it's just a bit boring and flat. There's a lot of that going on, that I see in the industry a little bit. But I see you guys trying fun things and, you know, just getting your fans' advice on stuff and going with what your fans say as well. It's really engaging what you're doing. How do you plan ahead for that kind of stuff? Where's all that come from?
Just fucking wing it, man. We're just constantly winging it. It's just like let's try this and let's try that. Yeah. None of us are like too precious about it. And so if somebody's got an idea, we're like, go with it and see what happens, pretty much. But like you talk about releases being boring. I don't even know if we'll tell you when our next release is coming out.
Yeah.
It might just appear on Spotify and hopefully you find it. Because things are boring right now. It's always the same story. Oh, big announcement at 5 PM. Oh, it's a new song. Oh, it's a gig. It's like, right, you didn't need to like keep all these wee teasers. It's pointless. It is boring. It is stagnant at this point.
It is, yeah.
I'm not having a dig, but like, come on, guys, level up, man.
I am a little bit, because I'm right bored of seeing it, because obviously at RGM I follow thousands of bands and it's quite lazy to do it. They just see other people doing it, so they think, oh, I have to do that because other people have done it. But there's hundreds of bands just regurgitating the same old fucking boring shit. So I am having a go. I want people to spice it up. I want people to be more experimental with it, just to engage a little bit more. And if you do engage a little bit more, I'll be knocking on your door for a fucking interview. You don't need to message me every 5 minutes asking, because it's not going to happen until I'm entertained by you. So
right, Michael, let's hire a skywriter. You know those planes?
There we go.
And we'll just put announcement at 5 PM in the middle of the sky above Manchester.
The announcement is the announcement. That's what's going to happen. And we'll just keep doing that. And you'll actually miss the release because it's just a bit in between. See, the thing is as well is just genuine honesty, right?
Yeah.
There was a moment at the... But you also have to build a wee bit of hype, right? And you have to, in order to do that, you have to starve people a little bit of what's happening.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, I mean, there is 100% psychology behind it, but as you say, what ends up happening is it's like when you get marketed on TikTok and stuff.
Yeah.
No one genuinely wants to be sold to, right? So, like, you might like our music, but it would actually turn you off if we were like, listen to our next single. And if everything we said was to try and like get you to click a link or get you to sign up to something, it would totally turn you off. And so, like, 100%, like, and one of the things we're realizing is that who we are and what we do, music's one element of it, unfortunately, right? This is one of the key kind of penny drop moments for us, maybe in the last couple of years, is that music is one of the legs of what we do. Live music is another element of that, but social media is another element of that. There is like live content, right? So like we've obviously got a Patreon now, because for us, what we hated doing is that we were caught in that cycle of creating content for people that we didn't really want to create, nor did we want to try and thrust down people's throat. That's a really bad recipe for making engaging content, right? Because actually I didn't want to be doing it and you didn't want to be watching it. Brilliant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where there is actually Patreon, totally different. Could not have changed the game anymore for us, because of course I want to make content for you. If you're a monthly subscriber, I'll go and sing you songs that you want. You know what I mean? I'll sit there and I don't sit there and go, oh my God, I have to. No, totally fine. Yeah. I will do the best version of that I can, because I appreciate the people who are watching it. Not only are they going to sit and pay us to do it, they're going to sit and take the time to watch every bit. So even those 10 to 15 people who might watch on the first day, say, right? That's 10 to 15 engaged people. And then over the course of the week, as the more Patreon subscribers watch it, it's like a little community. Mm. And it's completely different. And I think for us, obviously, there's an element of like, we're just trying to be as real as possible in terms of, and even saying things like that make me like, be a wee bit sick. But what I mean by that is that we're trying to be as honest as possible, right? Because of course, we didn't want to be like, guys, announcement at 5 PM. Like, of course, we didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? We just be like, bye, we've got a song coming in. Hope you enjoy it. Move on. You know, like, it's just, you just want to be like that.
I can remember right at the beginning of the year, I did like some tips for bands to take into this year, and having a Patreon was one of them, because you are creating your own community, and mailing lists is another good one that a lot of bands don't really utilize. But having those people that have signed up to your mailing list, or they're paying £2, £3, £5, whatever it is on Patreon to invest in your band, and to, because they're interested in what you want to do, in those type of accounts are more valuable than anything, I suppose.
100%.
Can we just put a disclaimer in there that is, if you start a mailing list and it becomes moderately successful, that you will then be forced to start a Patreon because your mailing list will make you start subscribing for it, and it costs an absolute fortune.
Yes, yeah, I have noticed that actually. Like MailChimp, innit? It's like, is it like 250 quid or something if you've got more than 500 names on a mailing list or something? It's just,
We tried to set up two different accounts. Mm. We tried to do two and two. So like we could go and build the list again and just duplicate. So we were going to go and set it up to another email address, but we've outgrown the amount, which is terrible because we're not a business either, right? Like, ultimately, we no doubt will be at one point, but we're not a business yet. And so, like, it's just like, God, we just want to, you know what I mean? It's, you get punished for doing anything good because either someone nicks it for you or you get limited in some way, which is just so annoying.
Yeah. So there was some, I can't remember who it was on Twitter that were talking about it. It was when Facebook and Instagram went down the other day. And everybody went onto Twitter saying, is your Facebook down? but it makes you think that people were like, shit, it's my business. People like panicking a little bit because one, it was like their arm had been cut off because they couldn't go on Facebook for an hour. It just shows you that if you haven't got a fallback plan, if you haven't got a Patreon, if you haven't got some kind of mailing list, whatever size it is, then you're kind of fucked if it gets taken away from you and you've got no control over that audience. You might get your account hacked and then you fucked it and all, which is a nightmare.
100%. And also, does not equate to ticket sales.
No.
Right? And actually, what's mad in all of this is that, like, you can back yourself a little bit. So we know our pull down in London, right? Mm. That's an achievement for us. Can I tell you how buzzing we were that we sold out in London, right? Yeah. Twice. Just to show up for a second, because that's genuinely buzzing, right? We know people who are on like 30 to 50k followers on Instagram who can't sell out in their home city, right? And that is mad, because actually you feel that you're failing when you're not competing with the numbers, at least social media wise, with your peers. But actually your success and how you define it is different, and you're actually you're getting more engagement by people coming along to a gig, because they're like the hardcore. They're like, yeah, I mean, to get them and get them liking something, you must be doing something right. But that's kind of, you have to get comfortable at that. But that's why we don't care. We've not applied to be blue tick on Instagram, for instance. Yeah. Right? Because we're just like, cool, crack on. I quite like that we're not, if I'm honest.
Well, a lot of those people that you talk about, they've got 30,000 on Instagram. They've just followed and unfollowed loads of people, haven't they? They've just cheated to numbers in a way as well, haven't they?
Some of them cheat, but some of them have genuinely organically grown a base, right? And so, like, and this is, I can actually like vouch for some of our like friends and stuff who we know maybe struggle ticket wise, right? But it's not always the case that they've got like bots and like the numbers are grown. Some of them are genuinely so organic. Yeah. But what they have is like, it's not like a concentrated amount, or like, so it's really difficult to get that pool. So if you look at the percentage in like, I don't know, their home city, for instance, it's not the same. But that doesn't mean that it doesn't slight their online content, because their online content is amazing. And that's the thing for us, is there's nothing wrong with that. And I think sometimes when people talk about it, it demonizes a wee bit, like, you've got all those followers, but you can't sell a ticket. No, that just means that they're learning the ticket side. We're learning the social media side. Mm. It doesn't mean, we're not competing. And I think for me, it's just like, but it is mental to see sometimes, because you must feel so successful if you're doing that. But then what a mental balance that must be, that if you can't sell tickets to your show. Like, what am I doing wrong? Because everything online is amazing, you know?
Yeah, it's just hard working. Apart from writing the tunes, playing the gigs, doing all the traveling, paying for everything, ordering the vinyl months in advance and having a release day, organising people for rehearsals for four or five people to be in the same place all the time. And you've got to start making reels, and you've got to know how you do all that kind of shit. And you've got to kind of try to stand out against 100,000 billion people all doing the same thing. It's interesting in this world. We wouldn't have it any other way, would we?
No. Love it.
How do you like it? Because just from an RGM point of view, when Reels came out, I'm like, oh, I'd just park that for a bit. Then started posting the odd for you, and you just saw you get a lot of engagement on, particularly on Reels and that kind of stuff. So you have to learn how you do it, and then you have to make an effort and spend time editing videos and knowing how to make the right size for Instagram and all that kind of stuff. How do you take to these new challenges that keep coming up and different ways of sharing your music with people and all the different, like, you know, threads and TikTok and all, you know, how do you learn the new skills yourselves? How do you go about it?
It's like a new, it's just a new medium to be creative, I suppose. So we're all relatively creative people. So I actually quite enjoy it when there's something else new that comes along and it's like, oh, we need to try and learn this. Don't get me wrong, we are still learning quite a lot of it, but we're getting better all the time. And that's really, that's the end goal at the end of the day.
We've invested a bit of time in it is another thing. So like actually we recognise that this isn't going anywhere. And so like there's a curve coming, right? And so like similar to a way back when people were like, I hate Facebook. Facebook is now genuinely like a staple of, everybody has a Facebook. Even if you don't have it active, you still had one. But you've still got one, you've just deactivated. You know what I mean? But it's like it's such a thing that's embedded into culture. That actually there's a wave coming, and if you go against it, and if you go against things like reels and stuff like that, it's absolutely nothing wrong, but you're just making it harder, especially if what you want is what it can give you. But I think for us is we appreciate the fact that we were trying to cotton onto it and just see how we get on. And there's that kind of element of fuck around and find out, right? But what we've realised is that the good quality stuff not only makes us engaged, it gets more engagement. And so actually we've started investing, like Joe's got right into editing videos, for instance, and we bought, like, one of the daft things we've done is we bought a video editing software so that he could learn it. And so actually there's like in time as we get better and we get more together more and when we go on tours and stuff like that, we're a lot more aware, we're a lot more socially media aware, right, of what we have to do. And it's actually becoming a little bit, it's not becoming easier, because there's still that kind of drag, but we're also starting to firmly know what we want to do. Whereas at the start, you feel like you're just trying everything, and if it doesn't get engagement, you're like, what's the point? Yeah. Whereas now we're like, let's do this. Let's try and learn this for the sake of it, and just video it. You know, which is a much better place to be, because then you can enjoy it.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And you mentioned the other guys, and let's give a shout out to the people that aren't on the video today. Let's talk about the other members of the band. Tell us a strength, what they bring to the band, and maybe a weakness, a development area for them. We can wind them up a little bit. We can wind them up a little bit. They're not here, are they?
Alan could be better with the money, to be honest. He's terrible with money.
No, Alan, tell you what Alan does. Single trait that Alan has that he could improve upon. He slams his drum hard cases like he is Thor and it's Thor's hammer. He goes down. Anytime you go anywhere, I'm not joking, it could be standing in a quiet conversation and you're like, what? That's my only thing. I hope he hears this and I hope he realizes how violent he is with this drum case. Because it's just not right.
He could also improve his music taste slightly.
Okay. I know.
Go on.
Stitch him up. He's got a bit of a Chris Martin obsession, in all honesty.
Oh, wow.
It's somewhat embarrassing.
I was not expecting that.
It depends. But he's got a wide sort of range. But he's mad for a wee bit of Chris Martin, which is fair, you know. Wee bit of Ed Sheeran, wee bit of Chris Martin. Listen, I'm not gonna beam up for it. It is what it is. But here you go.
Joe's a bit too anal, a bit too organised. it's tedious at this point. So if he could maybe just chill out a bit more, I would probably appreciate that.
Yes.
In what way? What is he responsible for? Like booking the room to the gig. It needs a plan, right?
Just needs a plan. Right. Just needs a plan. So he just needs to learn to just go with it. Whether it's like, you know, I mean, things change.
Yes.
Things change. Okay. Shit happens. Yeah. So hey ho. But the good qualities of them. Brilliant at bass, brilliant at drums.
There we go. And we've not missed anybody. Have we covered everybody there? I want to make sure everybody's got a
shout. That's it. All good. We get to split all that money we don't make four ways.
So I've been listening to Rubik's Cube recently, and what I really enjoyed about it is the transitions in between them. I haven't heard any other band do that and have a little performance. It's kind of a little performance in between each song, really. On it, just talk us through that as an idea and as a vision for Rubik's Cube that you did, because I'm really eager to know more about it. Tell me about it.
It kind of came from like hip hop albums, wasn't it? Because a lot of hip hop albums have like transitions and skips in between it, and the idea kind of stemmed from that. Obviously, Michael just ran with it and came up with some beautiful soundscapes to match in between it. And then that was our debut EP, and it was like when we were creating it, it was really special to us because we'd never really done anything to that scale before. We were working with a great production duo, shout out Jamie Holmes and Johnny Madden from Seven West Studios. But we'd never done it in that grand, so we wanted to make sure that like we encapsulated how we were all feeling at that moment. So everyone kind of got their own wee like transition. So River is my transition, and it's named after my wee boy who was he wasn't born at the time. He was just about to be born or something. I think he was just born actually after the EP was dropped. Then Joe's got J-Man, which is just encapsulates Joe's silliness perfectly. And Alan has Daddy's Songs, where he sampled his two kids actually speaking. And we included them all in the EP. So it was just to make sure that no matter what happens in the future, we will always have that to look back on and enjoy and listen to. Yeah. We can listen to that in 20 years' time and feel like the ages that we are now and feel that moment still, hopefully.
So how do you feel like you've progressed, like looking back on all your previous releases? How do you feel you've progressed as musicians and a band when you look back to when you first released a tune to where you are now, you know, just getting ready to release more?
For me, there's a strong sense of identity forming, right? And I don't necessarily want to have an identity yet, which is a really strange thing to admit, because when people tell you you have to have a sound, I don't think we necessarily want a sound, but we do want an identity to know why we do things. And so actually, if you track every song that we've released and you see the variation, almost like different genres, like if you listen to that EP now, if we were to go back and do it, we perhaps wouldn't have included some of the songs because we find them a bit alternative to what the EP sounds like to us now, which is a really strange thing to do. But at least sonically, we're really thinking about who we are. And it's not even that. It's just that everything that you release, everything that you put up on social media says a bit about you. So actually, you get a little bit more picky about what you want to say. I think for us, though, for me personally, in terms of like writing the songs, I learned so much in the way of songwriting and the way of how it's all kind of like put together that actually what like we used to do like sad boy ballads, right? So if you listen to a song called Hide and Seek, very like pour your heart out song, it's like, you know what I mean, like and I loved it, and it was on a sort of electric guitar. Now we've got new tunes in the bank that we've been away recording and we've been in the studio, and we still have that kind of like that, like I like to sing and I like to get the point across, but it's in a completely different way now. And in fact, it's in the way that we want it to be, because we're starting to sound like what we imagine Dictator to sound like. And I feel like Rubik's Cube, the actual song Rubik's Cube, was the turning point for us in that, where we finally, that was like when you're mining away with a pickaxe and then you just strike a wee bit and you go, that's what we've been looking for this whole time. And I think for any future music that comes out between after that Rubik's Cube to wherever, like to when we get to an album, no doubt that journey will just keep going and going and going. But for me, I think we now sound like Dictator. We know what we want to play live. We know how we want to come across live. We know the tunes that we want. We know how we want to sound. That doesn't mean sound the same. It means sound like Dictator. And I think that's for me, the biggest growth part. Found a little bit of an identity of what we're trying to actually achieve, because we've questioned ourselves for the last 3 years, which has been good and terrible in equal measure.
How do you feel about it, Zach?
Yeah, much the same. It's like we were an indie rock band by default, because we'd been an indie rock band our whole life, in indie rock bands, and that all the chosen instruments was all guitars and stuff like that. Yeah. But when we formed Dictator, we actually sat down and had the conversation and says, like, this is the kind of artist that we're into and who we kind of want to sound like and draw influences from. But we didn't know how to sound like that. So our first few releases, it's indie rock by default, because that's just what we knew how to do. By the way, like, I'm proud of those releases. We know how to do indie rock well. It's just not, it's just wasn't really the target at the time. But it took us a good few releases, a lot of practice, a lot of recording to work out how to create the sounds and structure the songs in a way that we wanted to encapsulate properly. And I totally agree with Michael. Rubik's Cube was that turning point. It was like everything just clicked at that moment in time. And then we're sort of building on that now. So the next batch of releases you're probably going to hear is is Rubik's Cube on steroids kind of thing.
Yeah. So is it still going to be like is it, because it's quite dreamy as well when I was listening to it. It's quite like more dreamy, very synthy, really dreamy kind of stuff, just like, you know, really cool guitar parts and that kind of stuff. And I was, before I started listening to it, before I wanted to contact you, I was thinking, just from seeing you online, I expected your music to be different to what it is. And I was really surprised how dreamy and different it is. I've probably not worded that the best, but that's kind
of I think I know exactly
it.
What you mean.
Yeah,
because see for me with like Conquistador and there's a lot of like kind of dreamy guitar sounds there. Finn's another one, right? So Finn's a bit of a laugh, and there's a lot kind of contained within that. I think for us though, is we're starting to recognise that sometimes what you see isn't what you get. Mm. Now we love that. We genuinely love that, but in this new world, is there more that we could do to like, because that's not necessarily who we see ourselves as, right? Mm-hmm. And that's actually something as well that we need to genuinely consider about, like, what type of music do we want to make? Mm-hmm. For us, it was always to try and be a little bit, like, we didn't want to do indie rock. It was to try and be synth-driven and to be different to what we'd done before.
Yeah.
And that still is the sort of objective in anything that we do. Can we make it weird, right? And mm-hmm. then you scale back. But genuinely, what we're trying to do now is we're trying to match it up to the expectation of what we want in terms of what we look like, what we want to sound like. And I think like Rubik's Cube's like that. Mm. Like Rubik's Cube, the song is like that. But we mean the production of it. We don't necessarily mean the upbeat and the sort of like tightness of the song.
Yeah.
It's the samples. It's the fact that we've incorporated synths and the live instrumentation and the samples and little funky bits in the songs that are so amazing live that have unlocked this like new thing. And I think for us, it is that. We've actually crafted an entire set around this kind of one song. Mm. And actually, we're now able to start saying, we're really good at this, play our strengths a wee bit. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. And could it get to a point where it's impossible to play live if you keep going?
It's already there.
Is it?
But that's the challenge. That's the challenge, because we like a challenge. It's boring.
Yeah.
Plugging in the guitars and turning up. We've done that. We want to be challenged.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll move on to your new music shortly, but you've got a few exciting things going on in the band. Just what does it mean to, you know, join the Marshall Live Agency? I saw you, you know, we might as well have a talk about that. I know you're announcing that shortly. And, you know, it's not been announced yet as we record this, but as it, you know, as this comes out, it'll be announced. Talk us through what this could mean for you as a band. Let's not presume anything until it's all sorted.
I think you've just jinxed us, man. I can't believe you brought this up, man. Come on. do you know, we set every year, like we set targets. We've got to be bored in the rehearsal room. And to get a booking agency was on it at the beginning of last year. Mm. It was like, right, 2023, we're getting a booking agent. Because we felt like we'd made a name for ourselves. We felt we'd proved our worth in the live arenas. And then it never happened.
Okay.
And we were fucking gutted.
Yeah.
And we were like, fuck this, man. You know what? We're just going to do our own thing. We're just going to move on. Like, we book gigs ourselves anyway. Mm. We can keep doing it by ourselves. And then at the beginning of this year, I don't know what made me do it, but I just thought, you know what? I'm going to reach out and see if they're looking for anyone. Sent them a couple of the demos that we've been working on, and instantly they were just like, oh, yeah, let's do it. Let's work together for sure. So it's amazing in the sense that all the hard work that we've been putting in, like last year felt like a real grind. Mm-hmm. It was like a fun year on the paper. It looks amazing, but actually, if you were to talk to us at numerous points last year, we would have been pretty like burnt out and pretty bummed out. So when little things like that come along, it just reminds you, oh, it's all worth it. Actually, this is like worthwhile. When we are gaining ground, even though it might not always feel like that, it's just.
Mm.
It's a marathon. It's not a sprint, as they say. And obviously, to be like Marshall, the brand, and music world is fucking iconic, man.
Yeah.
Like absolutely iconic. So to be able to just to be associated with them, is really really cool. The only problem with that is none of us play guitar amps. Like we are all on. I don't know how we're going to reconcile with that, man. But. It's fun though. It's just rewarding and it's exciting.
Yeah, I do see how much Marshall supported a band called Jen and the Generations. Jen and I've another
podcast. Degenerates.
Degenerates, that's it. Yeah, I met her once.
Much like us.
Yeah, I'm rubbish at remembering names. Yeah, Jen, I had him on the podcast, but it was during COVID a long time ago. And I'm crap at remembering stuff. But yeah, they are on their roster, and I've just seen them just get elevated and just seen the support that Marshall have offered that band. It's just great to see there's still these big companies giving back to grassroots music as well, which you don't see much about these days too. It's nice to see that.
Yeah, they seem pretty committed actually to really bringing up new artists. Mm. I don't think they're too interested in bigger artists or heritage artists at this point in time. Mm. They seem really focused on the grassroots arena and to really build on those acts. And I definitely feel like it comes from a passion of new music. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it's any sort of business orientation, although I'm sure it is because it's a massive company, but it feels much more, it feels very honest, and it feels like it's just because they love music and they want to help music move on to the next stage, I suppose.
Yeah, you can tell when people are faking it, and everything they do with the bands on the roster that they're supporting, that I follow them online anyway, it does feel genuine. It does feel like they're in it for the right reasons, and they're genuinely supporting people rather than a sales type of pitch. It looks great.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, pretty excited to see where it holds, genuinely. And it's nice to kind of, there's a match of ambition, though. Quite often people don't understand that it's like actually signing up to them means more work. And we've got a healthy appetite for that.
Yeah.
But I think sometimes people can kind of get signed up to these things and go like, brilliant, my work's done. No, we fully appreciate what we're signing up to and what we're getting into, and we're looking forward to that, because it's kind of like another pair of hands rather than we'll just give you this and bugger off, which is good.
Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to ask you about is, you know, life on the road a little bit. We're just looking through your biog earlier. You've supported Friends of the Podcast. We've had Ratings on. We've had Revan the Makers. I've not had The View on, but I'd love to have The View on. Kyle, if you're watching. But, you know, what was it like playing the big stages with those type of bands? Give us some stories about life on the road on the big stages.
To be fair, some of the best memories, like you doing all of this, was on the Ratings tour. The Ratings tour was like our first, I'm going to put it in the bracket, big boy tour, right? And I just remember, like, there's been so many moments. Well, some of the things, though, right? So there's some things you don't realise. Like, so we nearly missed the gigs so many times, right? Because everywhere beyond the border, right, seems to just be any M, insert random number after it. There's accidents that just close the whole thing down.
Okay.
And there's no alternatives.
Right.
So, like, genuinely, especially in and around Birmingham, right?
Yeah.
Anything near any road in Birmingham, we drove that at 3 o'clock in the morning once and got stopped in the, and we were sitting there just like, are you kidding? But there were so many sort of gigs that just stick out to me during that. Like, there was one we played in Northampton, right? And I don't know if you've been, I think it's called, is it the Roadhouse, Zach? Is that what it's called?
Roadmender.
Is that the one in London? I thought, well, basically. But there was this place, right? Roadmender, I think it might be Roadmender, you're right, in Northampton. And I'm not joking, if you walked in and it was a gym hall. You know how when you go back to school and it was like the wooden floors, like, and you had your plimsolls on and you're sitting there, it was like that, right? And we were like, what the hell is this place? In Northampton on a Sunday night. Right? Northampton, Sunday night, never been in Northampton. And the place looked a bit run down for the outside, I'm just saying, right?
Yeah.
And we were like totally fine looking forward to it. But we were the openers. So you're the opener. You have to understand where you are in that. And we were like, fine, that is what it is. We'll see where we get there. And that genuinely, I think in that whole year, was our favourite gig. It was amazing. Everybody just gelled with who we were and understood us. And also there was a weird Scottish connection there, which I think helped. There was a lot of Celtic fans in Northampton, weirdly. But that was just, I don't know, it was just like, see, getting to play to these crowds in these size of venues, we were able to run about, we were able to really like express ourselves in different ways. And I just remember being so exhausted every day. Mm. And then as soon as it was like, as soon as you started playing, you were like, I love this. I could do this forever. And it was such a strange thing of like energy dips and then a massive like spark of like, this is the best thing ever. I want to do this forever for my life. So, but I know, Zach, you probably got a different view in some of them, but.
Well, no, the Ratings tour was like, it's probably still one of the highlights of our entire career, man. I've never been more appreciative of those boys for giving us that opportunity and those experiences. We learned so much about ourselves, about how, you know, what's required to be a successful band, and just all the effort that actually needs to go in to putting on like a really good live show. Those guys are known for their live shows, and they work their asses off to make sure that you know, it pops every single night. So those memories, those experiences will be with us forever. And I agree with you, Northampton was still one of the highlights of their gigs. Michael put it politely, but we were like, we did not want to be there. We pulled up to that gig. It was Sunday night. We were shattered. Yeah. We'd been gigging. That was the fourth gig after our own headline in Glasgow, then driving down to Southend, or maybe it was the third gig, but driving to Southend like 10, 11 hours on the road, and then going up to Northampton on a Sunday night and just being like absolutely tired. Pulled up, and it didn't look like much from the outside, as Michael said. And then as we walked on stage, everyone had came in early, and they just seemed to enjoy our music. Like, we've never actually been back to Northampton. We really need to make the effort to get back there. But yeah, the road life is difficult, but there's all these tiny little 30-minute segments of just pure joy that makes it all worth it, man.
It's inspirational, isn't it? When you just look at, you know, Rotherham from where I'm from originally, like Rotherham is Sheffield way type of way, and the 2,000 tickets off selling 20,000 people at Clifton Park in it's inspirational, isn't it? You know, it just proves it can be done, and with a bit of graft,
work ethic, and it's so it's like a total worthwhile. Like, you can see them doing amazing, and there's like a meritocracy to what they're doing. They haven't just been given it; they've earned it, and we've seen that, and we've been part of that sort of journey for a wee bit. Yeah. And see, the thing for us, right, is that one of the main things is, we actually bet them at the mini hoops game in the arcade outside where
South
was
End
it?
Arcade.
South End on Sea. I think that's important to just stick in, right? Okay. That's a massive factor. So I might be headlining Clifton Park, but can he play the wee mini hoop game, right? But I just remember, like, there were so many nuggets that they gave us, but we were so interested in how they done what they done. And they were always forthcoming with advice, and like giving us the absolute, this is what we would do, this is what you should do. And I think that's like, there was a genuine kind of like appreciation there, that we weren't just like some little opening act who was getting drunk and going like, wait, it was none of that. It was like, we really appreciate this opportunity and we want to seize it. What we didn't appreciate is they went into a different stratosphere the following year. And we were like, wow, this is like, you know, I mean, this is class to see. But we learned so much from them, and we still keep in contact with them. Still keep in contact with our manager, Rich. He's a really good guy. Really kind of helped us navigate some of the tricky terms in this world as well. So none but praise for the guys.
Right. So let's look ahead a little bit then. So what's coming up for Dictator? What can we talk about? What can't we talk about? Well, you can't tell me what you can't talk about. What can you talk about?
Kind of talk about anything. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Absolutely. Get none, Trace.
We're going to release a lot of new music this year.
Right. Okay. Nice.
The first release is actually coming really soon, but we've not announced the release date yet.
Okay.
And don't want to give it away quite yet at this point in time. But there's plenty of new tunes. I think we're dropping a new EP at the end of the year as well. And as well as that, in between all of that, we're working on recording what will hopefully be our debut album.
There we go.
That's the key one for us. Everyone's been leading up to this, right? We had to sit down the drawing board and say, at what point do you just start doing an album? What we realised is we have had to find our own way of doing that, right? But we found our own way. We know we've got the path that we've been kind of wondering, just kind of lit up. And we were like, ah, cool. And that's the first time in a long time that we've actually seen something in front of us and going, cool, this makes sense, let's do it. I think last year, focus was on live. The focus was on touring. Focus was on getting used to doing that. And we've realised that actually your attention's so diverted from the social media stuff, from the songs and all the stuff that you love doing, that we love making music and releasing music, mate. This is literally, like, that is literally why we do this. Because we get to express ourselves and release it. And see, when we went that long without releasing a song, we're like, what are we doing this for? Now, all that aside, the fact that we're able to go and sell out shows without releasing songs, unbelievable. Like, we genuinely, like, that's amazing. But we need to be releasing music, you know, we need to be a lot more active and meaning that, and we genuinely can't wait. So we've went away and done loads of work to get ready that hopefully this year and into next year there's no extended breaks because we know what we're doing.
I feel nicely teased. I think we're going to leave people wanting, aren't we? Yeah, I think that's a good
big announcement coming soon. Check back here.
We're all fucking hypocrites. We all do it. Right, and so I'm going to put a link to the band's socials within the description of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. So if somebody's watching this podcast that are new to Dictator as a band, what would you say to those people hovering over the link that are about to invest in your band? What would you say to some that haven't pressed a button yet and they're just about to and they just not made it?
Don't click it. Just leave it. Just get on with your life. You'll never hear from us again. To be fair, it depends. Because the mad thing is chucking everything at everybody and be like, click this, do this, do this. We genuinely, right? If you like, go and listen to our EP. Go and listen to Rubik's Cube. Yeah. See if you like that, click the link because you'll like what we've got coming next, right? See if you don't like that, don't worry, it's totally different. So, hopefully, you'll like it anyway. I think that's appropriately on the fence enough.
Yeah, nice. Well, Zach, Michael, really appreciate you joining us this evening as well. We've all had long shifts today. I hope people realise. You know that we're all knackered and we've all had long shifts at work today, haven't we, lads?
Yes.
Got a bag of mamas waiting on me though.
Oh, have you, mate? Oh, we'll let you get off for some snap. Zach, Michael, and all the lads from Dictator. Thanks, lads. I really enjoyed that. Nice one. Great insight into a band that have got their head screwed on and they know the game and they're just out there to create something great and be different doing it along the way. Nice one, lads. Yeah, seen a few festival announcements this week on the old socials. I've seen This Feeling by the Sea in Bridlington. That looks like a class lineup. My highlight of last year was that little festival in Bridlington. Just being on Seaside, you know. Just having some beers with loads of the music community around you, meeting new people. It was just fantastic last year. I can't wait to do it again this year. So that's coming up in September if you want to have a little nosy for that. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be here next week for another podcast. Do us a favour, will you? Do us a 5-star review on Amazon or if you're on, you know, Spotify and Apple Music and all that bollocks. Leave us a review if you can, because that helps. If you can be bothered, press subscribe on YouTube for us, please, and ring the bell and all the other things that people tell you to do. I don't want to get bogged down with that. I'll leave it there. But we'd appreciate it if you could be bothered. Thank you. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for sticking right into the end, sticking with us to the end of this podcast. This is the bit when I start to babble. And this is the bit when I realise I start to babble. And wish you all the best for another music week ahead and get off and get out of here. So, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for joining us for the podcast. It's very much appreciated. As always, I love what we do and what we've created with this thing. And if you need anything, you know where I am. And I'll see you for another week. Toodaloo! Welcome to RGM. Are you in a band? Come and join us. Simply click on the RGM submission page, submit your music, and we'll sort the rest.
Hello. Did you know that you can support our podcast in many ways? Within the description of this podcast, you will see a list of all the equipment that we use. These are Amazon affiliate links. Clicking on these links take you to Amazon. If you buy whatever you're planning that week, we get a small kickback and you get a parcel at no extra cost. We would really appreciate your support. Or you can just go old school and donate a pound or whatever you feel is appropriate in there. Please subscribe, tell a friend about our show. And thank you for your support, and we'll see you next week.